Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Watkins Awarder Show. It is Monday, March 29th, 2021, and you have T. Tate here, and I'm joined, as always, at the hip by an inconspicuous individual who's a shadow person today, Mr. J. Everett Pearsall. Good evening, Mr. Pearsall.
Well, you know, it's either have the sun in my face or the sun on those palm trees. So I chose to let the sun shine on the palm trees. They look better than my face. Good evening.
May I ask, Mr. Pearsall, where are you today?
You certainly can. I'm in Phoenix, Arizona. Phoenix, Arizona, home of the Phoenix chapter of the National Alliance of African American Athletes, with the president, Scott Williams, experiencing his hospitality and the great work that they're doing here in Phoenix.
You telling me that's hospitality?
Oh, man, he knows how to put it down. He is Mr. Phoenix, Arizona, and our chapter is doing a whole lot of stuff with a whole lot of youth here in Phoenix.
Well, the first thing he's going to have to do is straighten out your light problem.
Oh, you know, that lighting is one thing, boy. Got to get it straight next time, I promise.
Well, I'm gonna have to get on, Mr. Scott. I mean, clearly, Mr. Pearsall, I'm having a ball today, and man, we're gonna have a great day today. I mean, first things first. I want my listeners to know and the viewers to know, because you know this is a live show. That again, you are in Phoenix, Arizona. I mean, one minute you're on the beach, now you're in Phoenix, Arizona. Boy, I tell you, you get around. But more importantly, I want them to know that we got another special guest. I don't want them to think that, you know, clearly we're making up these things, but, you know, clearly we got another extraordinary young man who's going to join us later into the show, J.R. Lemon, who just happens to be from Atlanta, Georgia. So we got another Atlanta guy. That's going to be talking. And the other thing that I want people to know, you know, as I do all the time, Mr. Pearsall, I try to make sure that everyone knows that there is a disclaimer that we do before the show. And you know that disclaimer, Mr. Pearsall. We don't want to put the listeners into shock. We want everyone to know that this is a live show. Everything that we talk about is for real, for real. If they have any questions, they can go to the website at www.naaa.com. They can send an email to us at thewatkinsawardshow@gmail.com. That is thewatkinsawardshow@gmail.com. I want them to know, and I'm going to read something to you today from an avid listener. But I want to make sure that everyone knows that the views and opinion by Mr. Pearsall and I are our views and opinion. And as I say all the time, the person that's in the shadow is not an FBI agent, special agent or anything. That is Mr. J. Everett Pearsall. You know, he's going through a metamorphosis now. He wanted to be a little inconspicuous because of the emails that I receive. He wants, oh, there's a better picture of him right there. Yeah, I want them to see a picture of you. Yes, thank you. The engineer, he is right on point to make sure that individuals get a chance to see who you are, just in case they come in contact with you out there in Phoenix, Arizona. But those views and opinions are not of BBS Radio or any of our sponsors or anyone. It's J. Everett Pearsall and T. Tate, which will take the responsibility of you going through shock listening about the absolutely wonderful show, but words that Mr. Pearsall and I try to pass through each other because we're having fun. I mean, clearly we are having fun. So, Mr. Pearsall, you know how I like to start off the show. I always start off the show because there are some people who are listening for the first time. There's some people who have listened repeatedly, but they got to know what's going on here, because the true value is not just listening to this good news, because sometimes you can be too close to the trees and can't see the forest. So the true value of listening to this show is that you'll get the information you need to pass on to your son or daughter. It doesn't matter. It can be male or female, but your son or daughter, if you envision them to one day be this super athlete who just happens to be an extraordinary scholar, you know, the young man or the young lady who goes in a classroom, who's very focused on their schoolwork. Now, what we're doing is sharing these stories, real stories, I want to admit. This is not the Lifetime channel. This is for real, for real. This is not made for radio and or TV. This is for real. So, Mr. Pearsall, the Watkins Award, what's the best way to explain the Watkins Award?
The Watkins Award is the premier scholar athlete in the country. What we do is we go around the country, and through our nominating committee, we're able to gather the top 50 baseball players, the top 50 basketball players, and the top 150 football players. After nomination, we give them an opportunity to compete for the award by producing a package that gives our now selection committee the opportunity to grade those packages and select the top five guys that we'll be honoring year in and year out. So again, as I state to you, imagine the top 150 football players. You have about 50 to 70 people on each team. Imagine how many teams that are in each city. Imagine how many teams are in each state. How many kids are playing football? We're talking about the top 150 athletic players. And now asking them to show us evidence of their GPAs, having them write an essay as to why they think the Watkins Award and symbolizing what it's all about is important to them, sending letters of recommendation, and all the things that give our selection committee to feel like a feeling of knowing them and getting to know their families and all the support around them and why, again, the Watkins is important to them. And so it's a significant award whereby we've got those top athletes that become household names at the next level when they go into college. But we know them because they've got 4.5 grade point averages, 200 hours of community service, have worked with kids for years and years and years, and really want to be known for what they represent off the field in terms of their character. That's what the Watkins Award is all about.
Man, that's something. And, you know, I just wanted to make sure I'm clear here, because a lot of people misunderstand what it is that we're attempting to do. What we not only are here to highlight the life of these young men, which, as I mentioned, let me be clear about this. I mentioned young men, these are seniors in high school, but this information can be taken by any adult and translated to a youth and help him or her to find themselves in a position like these young men were in and currently find themselves in, because this is a path that they travel. They just didn't jump some steps and say, well, okay, forget middle school, forget high school, forget college. I'm just going to get to this point in my life as success. And I'll look back over my life and say, you know, I wish I had done this in sports. I wish I had done that. You know, I hear it all the time. I hear guys talking about their careers. I mean, we can talk about our careers, gentlemen, but the proof is in the pudding. Unlike when I was in school, Mr. Pearsall, we didn't have, you know, iPhones and Androids and all that kind of stuff instantly, you know, of course, Twitter and Instagram, all this social network stuff. Now, I want to admit, and I'm going to be clear, you got to be careful what you ask for, because you do have kids that start to get rated when they can be as young as 9 years old. They can be rated or ranked in a system if they're 7 years old, if they show any kind of potential. But Mr. Pearsall, with that said, you got a kid that that's running around in your community, or a bunch of kids running around in your community. What's your thought about this great man who, you know, name is Franklin D. Watkins? What's your pitch on Mr. Franklin D. Watkins and him coming from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, putting an organization together that ultimately has a trophy that honors the top African American scholar? Now, when we say the top, I just looked it up. It's 16,000 high school football teams in the United States. So you got 16,000 high school football teams. So what would you say that this guy that I always call a community man, what do you talk about Mr. Franklin D. Watkins real quick for me, Mr. Pearsall?
Franklin D. Watkins was a community man, a man who was about taking care of things at home. But as he extended his realm of influence, he did everything to reach back into the community and change the lives of kids in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And when we started the organization and wanted to use athletes to actually put out messages of empowerment, that a lot of that was his idea. A lot of that was the work that he was already doing in the community as a counselor, as a coach, and as a person that was mentoring youth all throughout the city of Harrisburg. And so, however, not a household name in Franklin D. Watkins, the reason that we started this award is because he was really the cornerstone for the work that we continue to do now, you know, 30, 31 years later. And moreover, he's not a person that you can put on a pedestal by way of saying he's a Walter Payton or a Jim Brown or a Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who may have had some elite physical capabilities that they were able to go out and play a sport at a certain level. Franklin D. Watkins is all of us. We can all do everything within our power to give back to the community that we serve and make tomorrow's world a better place to live in. And so that's, you know, in a nutshell, you know, why we named the award after him, because he is in all of us and we have the capability of having the same type of impact that Franklin D. Watkins did, but he did it. And we challenge everyone to do the same.
Man, that's powerful. I wanted to hear the words from you this time, because I recognize that, you know, sometimes one person who constantly say the same thing, the message can be a little cloudy sometimes. But I wanted to hear that from you, and that's certainly a great answer. Pretty much the same thing that I say all the time, but I just wanted people to finally hear it from someone else. And I'm sure, as you've mentioned before, all of the individuals who are involved with the Watkins Award, the board members, the sponsors, so many different people who are involved with the Watkins Award that we talk about over and over and over, the various committees, whether it's the alumni, the guys who come through the program and who are working, you know, their pants off now for us. It's an awesome, awesome, you know, sight to see. So I'm just going to say this again, that what we are trying to do is pass on some information to adults, whether you are a parent or a guardian, or you're just a person that lives in the community, and you identify a young man for our award, the Watkins Award, which is for African-American male athletes. Don't just wait until the kid is in the 11th grade and say, hey, this kid could have been. Find a kid that's in the 7th or 8th grade that you see that has promise, or you have the willingness to spend some time with that young man, and you think you can encourage. You know, as a former teacher myself, always said there was three things that was important to me as a teacher and no doubt as a coach. I had to motivate, encourage, and inspire. Those were the three things that were important to me. If I couldn't do those three things, then I had let not only myself down, but I let these kids down. This is the future of America. I mean, some of you see some of these kids acting up in school. And can you imagine that one of these kids may be an EMT one day and pulling up because you done had an accident or something, and you look at his or her face and say, wait a minute, that's the same person that used to be acting up in school. But I'm so glad that you are listening to us, ladies and gentlemen, young men, young ladies. Just want to let you know that we're trying to educate you as well as do what I've always said, inspire, motivate, and encourage you to be better, to be a better athlete, to be a better student. Now, I just want to do a little housekeeping because I know we'll come up on a break, and then our guests will be coming in at any time. But we appreciate everything, the donations that people have been making, certainly our sponsors. You can go by the website and make a donation anytime. You can go by www.naaa.com. You can go by there, make donations, and help us to continue doing what it is that we're doing with this organization. If it's not clear to you yet, don't worry. I'm not frustrated. I'm not mad. But just know that our job is to make sure that we recognize these young men in your community. This is a national award. We do have some sponsors that have been great to us, whether it's just recently or in the past. Jan Adams with JMA-Solutions.com, JMA-Solutions.com. I encourage you to go by their website, check Ms. Adams out, her website. They are headquartered in Washington, D.C., but they got offices in New Jersey and Oklahoma. It's a minority-owned business. She's been involved with the Watkins Award for a long time. If you want more information, go by the website, or you can call the telephone number 202-465-8205. Okay, we want you to help us, to help our sponsors, because our sponsors are helping us to stay on air. ExoticCarSharing.com. These guys, you'll hear the commercial from time to time. Norm Washington is the owner of ExoticCarSharing.com. You can go by the website, or you can give them a call at 888-264-3327. That's 888-264-3327. These guys are great. They've been doing a lot for us. I joke with Mr. Pearsall. He's out there in Phoenix. I'm sure he got a muscle car in the parking lot of that hotel. There's no doubt he's somewhere riding around. You, if you in Phoenix, Arizona, and you see this guy flying down the street, I know he got a convertible top. He loves showing himself when he's out in the sun. I mean, it's unbelievable what this guy does and where he goes in order to share his travels.
Exotic Car Sharing by Kirby Road. is a full-service car-sharing company that has been in business for over 21 years. Based out of Palatine, Illinois, our company allows its members the ability to own fractional ownership of exotic cars at a fraction of the costs. Our share plans include reservations for weekend or weekly ride sharing. Our members get to choose from a Bentley one weekend to the McLaren 570S the next. No long paperwork, expensive maintenance, or expensive insurance requirements. Exotic Car Sharing has the fleet and capabilities to service all of our clients with quality luxury vehicles delivered at your doorstep. Register on our website at exoticcarsharing.com or call us at 888-264-3327.
Boy, that was a power play. Good gracious. Clearly, hey, Exotic Cowboy, they jumped in there. As I started talking about Pearsall riding around, he went on and put it on in there. But that's no problem. I see the engineer, he's jumping in and saying his mistake. But that's no problem. I appreciate that. That means I know Pearsall is out there. He probably pushed the button. He just wanted everybody to reemphasize the fact, be looking out for him driving down in Phoenix in that convertible top Bentley or whatever he's driving, or that muscle car. Last but not least, I want to talk about the Walker Agency. They offer homeowners, automobile, commercial, renters, motorcycle, and life insurance. They help protect your assets. So I just want you to know that Dennis Walker is the owner of the agency. He's a great guy. He's located here in Georgia, and his telephone number is 770-800-6270. That's 770-800-6270. And last but not least, K. Lofton Designs. They're located out in Conyers, Georgia. I got to throw another company out in Georgia. They're at 954 South Main Street in Conyers, and you can call them at 770-269-1874. That's 770-679-1874. Now, we talked about the guests, and look here, I'm really and truly, I'm excited about this particular guest. It's J.R. Lemon. He's a 2001 honoree who was selected to be the carrier of this trophy. I'm sure Mr. Pearsall is going to give you some more information. As a matter of fact, I encourage him to give more information about this trophy when he's talking to J.R. Lemon. But J.R. Lemon is from down here in the Georgia area. For those who really love football, certainly I can say that J.R. Lemon attended and graduated from none other than Sandy Creek High School. Everybody knows about Sandy Creek High School. As a matter of fact, I was indoctrinated when I got here. They always called it the Creek. Do you know about the Creek, Coach Tate? Do you know about the Creek? So I was indoctrinated. But J.R. has appeared in numerous national commercials and print campaigns. Here's the thing. After he left Sandy Creek, we got another guy who goes to Stanford. So he was either first or second in rushing, and not in the state, but in the nation. So he received not only a BS degree in management science, but he also received a degree in engineering at Stanford University before being signed as a running back to the Oakland Raiders. Now, his post-football, he promptly immersed himself into the study and the craft of being an actor. We got another actor, ladies and gentlemen, and he has since been on the ground running. He attributes his passion to his parents, and he set a foundation, or they set a foundation for him to think outside of the box with confidence, to follow his heart. With that said, I want to introduce Mr. J.R. Lemon. Are you there, J.R.?
Oh, yeah. What's happening?
Oh, boy, you looking proper. You got on one of those hats, boy, I tell you. You always looking good.
My name, baby, you know?
Well, yes, sir.
J.R., I just want to say I am truly honored because once I got here to Georgia, it only took a few years for me to get indoctrinated into the world of football, to understand this thing called football. I'm going to say up front, people should know this, that JR just happens to be a member of the great fraternity Kappa Alpha Psi Incorporated. I want to make that disclaimer, you know, why he is so outstanding, you know, up front. Hey, you know, his dad is a member of the organization as well. So it runs in the genes in that family. But JR, tell me, you know, before you left Sandy Creek, you were in middle school. When did you finally get to that point as a kid that you wanted to be a scholar athlete? Or did you even know that you wanted to be a scholar athlete?
You know, I had always been involved in sports recreationally. You know, my dad did a really good job of, you know, keeping me active. My dad's really an academic. You know, sports was a recreational thing. So I had always kept a finger on my grades just because that was the expectation. And I will say my mom and dad didn't, you know, jam it down my throat. They didn't force me. They more so just set a tone. Set an expectation that was something I needed to take care of, gave me the space to operate within that. Honestly, middle school is interesting because, you know, when I was sixth, seventh grade, I wasn't the man at all. There were these two Saluki brothers, you know, two Nigerian brothers that they were twins, and they were everything. Man, I had just got into football. I played as a 5-year-old, but I wasn't really into it. I was more of a baseball, basketball player. And I remember it was seventh grade and I was on kickoff return, but I was in the front wall. I wasn't the deep guy. And they kicked the ball short and I picked it up and ran it for a touchdown. And I remember that moment of looking at the Saluki brother, Hanif, I think his name was. And I was like, ain't you gonna pick this up, bro? Like, what's going on? He looked at me, said, pick it up, man, pick it up and run. And that was the first time I scored a touchdown. And it's funny, those brothers moved the next year. So in eighth grade, you know, I had been backup in seventh grade. In eighth grade, I got a shot. And my first game of my eighth grade year, I rushed for like 300 yards. You know, I was running all over the place. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know what a hole was, man. I would just run around the outside, you know. I was just hey, every play was a sweep, baby, you know. But I was just so big, so fast, so young that, you know, I was my size right now in the eighth grade, about 6'1", 195, you know, could run. And that was kind of the beginning, man. So the scholar athlete thing, I would say, you know, the scholar part was my parents' upbringing and just putting me in good environments, you know, from preschool all the way up.
Okay.
I had a real good balance of logic from my dad and empathy from my mom. So I had like this great combination that when I was in different situations, I knew how to operate.
Okay. So tell me, you get to Sandy Creek. Mm-hmm. Now, the Creek is known for their football players. I mean, man, you got some sweet.
The Creek is now known for their football players. You see?
So what was going on when you first got there?
So when I first got there, you know, it wasn't a winning program. We had a player come out 4 years before I got there, or just before I got there, named Jabari Holloway. And he was a man, man. I remember we used to go watch him, man. He was He was everything. And he was a scholar athlete, too. He ended up going to Notre Dame. He played for the Patriots for some time. But after him, you know, I remember when I got to high school, man, we had plastic face masks. Now, I don't know whose last team you saw we had some plastic face masks. But I remember one time I went to a, you know, and I was a freshman coming in, and they wanted me to play varsity. And I remember seeing the team. I said, no. I'm going to play with my team because we was wrecking in middle school. So we had a group that, you know, were together, and we, you know, we played together. So I said, man, I'm going to play freshman JV ball. We were a freshman team that played a JV schedule. So we were always, you know, we were in deeper waters, you know, from the beginning. And then my sophomore year, after my sophomore year, we had a new coach come in, this guy, Rodney Walker. And he brought his whole team in and really changed the culture of Sandy Creek and sort of started started the journey of where it is today. Yeah, that was really it was an interesting time, man.
So tell me, you just mentioned somebody who really is well known, and I went into his son's office, Coach Chip Walker, mentioned your name, and this guy lit up like a Christmas tree.
Yeah.
I mean, so. Tell me a little bit more about the environment, the expectation level, and how important that was for you when you were in high school that got you to the point that you was mauling, you know, I guess I'm gonna go to Stanford.
Yeah, you know, I mean that's a whole journey within itself. You know, that junior year when they came in, man. I mean, I was just thinking about it before I got on this call with you guys. There's one time in my life where I like thought about quitting football.
Whoa.
One time. And I remember it was, you know, we had, when they came, they brought with them this, you know, this football camp thing where we spent the night in the gym, like on sleeping bags, you know, in the gym for like a whole week. And we practiced three or four times a day. And it was crazy. I mean, it was, from what we were, you know, what we were doing before, it was the biggest change I'd ever experienced in my life. And as sort of the running back, you know, the guy who was, you know, getting the ball, carrying the load for the most part, Coach Walker just put this load on my shoulder that I didn't know. I said, man, if high school is this hard, how hard is college going to be? I said, I ain't going to live, man. This can't be real. And I remember Chip, you know, Chip is who got me through that. You know, Chip would be like, listen, man, I know, you know, but, you know, he's pushing you. You know, he believes in you. He would give me that reinforcement.
Right.
So I got a special place in my heart for, you know, Coach Chip. But I will say this, you know, that taught me how much further, that experience taught me how much further I can go than when my mind tells me to quit.
Okay.
So I remember a specific scenario. You know, during my junior year, my senior year, we got a lot of buzz, man. I went to some of those combines and ran well and jumped well and really showed out. And next thing we know, all the colleges were coming to visit us, sure. Especially after my junior season. And I remember, you know, I think it was Georgia's head coach was at our practice at the time. And we used to run this thing called perfect plays, where you just do one play and you run up and down the field. You just do it again and again and again, all the way up and down the field. Not on defense, just running the play perfect. And I remember I thought my hamstring was pulled, you know? So I was limping. I was limping really bad. And, you know, I thought my hamstring was pulled. And I just remember Coach Walker saying, quit all that damn limping. Quit all that. I remember being like, man, I'm gonna tear my leg in half, man. You know, but I didn't say anything. I just kept running, kept limping, kept running, kept limping, kept running, kept limping. And I tell you what, about 13 plays down, I stopped limping. And I was able to run. I was able to do the play. And I was able to do the next one. And I was able to do the next one. And that was the biggest example of when my brain tells me I can't do it. It's only giving me 40% of what my capacity is. You know, Navy SEALs, I found out later, the Navy SEALs call that the 40% rule, where when your brain tells you to quit, you're only at 40% of what your tank really has. And I think, you know, when they talk about when I got into this industry, you know, what I had over people who were starting out with me was that mentality of when my brain's telling me to quit, I'm only at 40%. And what that enabled me to do is move faster. I didn't go to drama school. You know, I didn't do a lot of the things a lot of my competition does. My peers out here have done. And it enabled me to get to a place where I could compete just, you know, scrapping it together myself. So, yeah, I got some life lessons from that. From that experience.
Well, I know Pearsall got a rack of questions for you, but I am going to tell you this so you know this. My son met you back in 2001, as a matter of fact, at the dinner. And, you know, he was so inspired that my son didn't even want to play sports no more. He started seeing you, you know, and the focus of you wanting to get into acting. And that's what drove him into the acting really hard. I mean, really hard. He saw, and I talked about, you know, you got to have passion, whether you're going to play sports or whatever you're going to do in life. But he wanted to really push hard, and that's what allowed him to be in grad school now and probably be finished in April. So I just want to thank you for... You know, sometimes people don't realize the impact that they have on someone. But here he just met you, you know, that time at your dinner, saw how personable you were. Most people think that they can't approach a Watkins guy. But I just want to stop with this. You've done a lot in sports, and I'll let Pearsall kind of track through your life over at Stanford because he came out to Palo Alto a couple of times. But, you know, you as an actor, you've done a lot of stuff, but most people probably look at your face and try to figure it out. Is this the guy I saw in one of Tyler Perry movies, Madea? Yes, this is DJR Lemon, the guy that played in Madea. How did playing football translate into your determination to be the best actor you possibly can be? You've been on several series along with you being a part of Madden. I mean, you're on Madden. I mean, every kid in the world say, wait a minute, his face look familiar. Yeah, because he's on Madden. You see his character on Madden. But how does all that translate from your football and your determination to, you know, your current acting career?
Yeah, it's a direct translation. But then there's a part that's also detrimental. But I'll speak to the part that's beneficial at first. You know, football players, especially those that are successful, we're used to pouring our soul into something. We don't know how to clock in and clock out for the most part. We're used to being, our soul has to be in it, right? In order to succeed or even to stay afloat in football at the higher levels, unless you're just, you know, that 10% of guys who are just freaks, you know, everybody else has to be all the way in. You know, to be a leader, you got to be all the way in. So transitioning to this is like that, where there's a lot of work that you have to do when nobody's watching, right? And you're preparing for game day, and you're constantly, you know, looking at yourself in the mirror and challenging yourself to defeat yourself. It's not necessarily about the next man across the field. It's about you doing your thing. You do your thing, everything to take care of itself. So I think operating in the gray, you know, there's no set route to succeed out here. There's no set route really in football to succeed. Anything can happen, you know. All you can control is what you can control. So thinking about it like that also helps out here in a very singular sort of thing. The detrimental part, I would say, is in football, you're rewarded for perfectionism. Right. Do it perfect. It's not practice makes perfect. I'm sure people have heard the saying perfect practice makes perfect. You see? So In football, we're rewarded for that. In art, right? Perfection isn't interesting. We want to see the flaws. We want to see those inside doubts. We want to see the things that make us human. We don't want to look at a robot. We want to look at the things that we want to see, the nicks and the crooks and all that kind of stuff. So I would say that was, for me, that was my biggest hurdle of having to jump over and having to adjust to, is not, you know, trying to be perfect all the time, trying to do things perfect all the time. It's about like finding what's present, you know, replace perfect with present. I just made that up, but I'm keeping that.
Good job. Good job.
You saw the string too, so I didn't make that up. You saw that on the fly.
That's right. Tyrone, I know I'm in the shadows. I know I'm in the shadows, but I see you're going to leave me a couple of minutes here, and I appreciate it. James Rock Lemon, a.k.a. J.R. Lemon, a.k.a. The Rock, a.k.a. Jay Reezy. Hey. So I'm calling the line. Hey, thanks for being on the show, brother. I apologize. I got stuck in Phoenix. I don't have my lighting, so you're looking at that big potato head that looks like a shadow on the screen. But it's me. I'm here. Man, we talked about, you know, Tyrone talked about a lot of what you've done. When I think about meeting you in high school, coming to your game, seeing what you did out there, the fact that Georgia was on your bumper, Georgia Tech was all over you, Auburn, and every school out there wanted what you brought to the table with regard to being a football player. And yet you chose to go to Stanford. And yet you chose to not only go to Stanford, but go for an engineering degree. There's two things I'd like you to talk about. First thing is, what made you so dedicated, and what was the workload that you had to go through in terms of sacrifice to do that, to go to a Stanford and then to do an engineering? And then right after that, talk about, as you went through that, what the Watkins Award meant to you and how it may have assisted you or been a part of your life through that.
Well, I'm going to start off with your nicknames, EP, also Percy, also Percival, also Persilimus.
Yes, sir.
Right. You know what I'm saying? A few of your incarnations. So when I said I was going to go to Stanford, you know, clearly my father was a big part of guiding me in that direction. And he was correct. He was looking at a 40-year decision versus a 4-year decision. You know, that sounded good to me, but he was actually in that. You know, I went down to Miami and, you know, saw that single braid, you know, I was, oh man, well, I ain't never seen nothing like this before, you know, but my dad had my back and he, you know, he guided me there at the time. I fell in love with it, you know, just on a, you know, a big issue with me, with my experience in the South was just the culture divide. In Stanford and Miami were the only two places that I went to where at the time, that I have visited in my experience where the whole team was like, where are we going after the game? The guy, you know, guys didn't split up and break off and stuff. And that meant a lot to me just off of my experiences. So to answer your question about, you know, why engineering, dude, I said, if I'm going to go all the way out here to go to school and I'm going to go to this challenging school, I'm going to do a challenging major. I'm going to get the most. I'm not just going to go do something I could do anywhere. You know, I'm going to do something. I think the major I chose was the first or second most competitive major at the school. Like that major, which was called Management Science and Engineering, which was a hybrid of sort of operations management, you know, of Silicon Valley and the engineers that they work for. Like there were a lot of times there was a knowledge gap between the two and they couldn't communicate with each other effectively. So they created this major to sort of bridge the divide. And we took all of the engineering disciplines. But that was what it was about. It was about, if I'm going to go to this school, this prestigious university, I'm going to get my money's worth, right? Quote unquote, because, you know, it's a sure. What was the other question?
What did the Watkins Award mean to you through this process and up until now?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's hard for me to separate you, Everett, from the Watkins Award, right? My experience with the Watkins Award and the dinner and the parade and that fantastic weekend that we got to see was incredible. And I was 17 years old and it really, I would say it was a part of my cocky phase though, right? Everything was on the up and up going, you know, beautifully. But I think what the Watkins really meant for me, not counting all of my friends, you know, who were participants in the award also, were finalists and who won the award also, it's just my relationship with you, Everett. Like, you've been there with me through some of my best and some of my most challenging times, and always have been there, willing to fly out like at the drop of a dime, willing to take a phone call, talk me through situations, talk me through tough times, talk me through beautiful times, be there when I, you know, when I needed to hide for a little bit, was always there when I wanted to come back. I mean, like, that in itself is a lifelong relationship and support that, you know, goes so far past any medal or award that you can possibly give somebody, right? You set a platform to me to spring off, for me to spring off from, for whatever I wanted to do. You know, I don't know that we had any actors or entertainers in the Watkins before, right? But, you know, I felt, you know, I talk about how my parents really set a foundation for me to jump off of. But this is similar. You know, this is similar to know people that are out. You know, one of the things about, you know, I'd say this journey for me, you know, there's no nepotism here. Like, I don't have any, you know, family or anybody I knew that was real successful out here that could kind of like usher me along. So you got to have that. You got to have that sturdy framework to be able to jump off of. And it's people like you and, you know, Big Tyrone, man, I come back to Atlanta, take care of me, you know, we go out to eat, fraternize, man. We talk, you know, it's support, it's love. And every year when y'all used to call us back, you know, have us back for the awards, it just built the camaraderie. So, I mean, it sets a tone, man. It sets a tone for, I would say, young Black men in such a positive way, in such a positive, and even Dr. Gavin's impassioned speech every year. You know, it's just, it sets a tone for achievement. I mean, for lack of a better word, man, just for achievement and whatever it is that you know, you choose to do, whatever it is, man. It's the Watkins family is a beautiful thing. And Everett, you've done an incredible job of like standing up for guys.
Uh-oh. I hear that music.
Music. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that
my
music.
Man, thank you, brother. Thank you, brother.
We're going to have to thank you. But hey, JR, before you go, what's a good Twitter account for you so, you know, the listeners and people who are watching can keep up with you?
Your social media.
Social media. I'm at JR Lemon 2 on Instagram, on Twitter. Got a new show coming out April 12th on HBO Max and the CW called Painkiller. It's going to be off of Black Lightning. So it'll be an episode of Black Lightning that'll air. So you guys can watch it April 12th. Hopefully we get picked up, have a whole deal. It'll be awesome.
Yes, sir.
We're going to be watching. We want all our listeners and people who are supporting the Watkins Award to watch it as well. Thank you again. We've had J.R. Lemon from Sandy Creek High School. He's gone to and graduated from Stanford University, and now he's a big-time actor out in L.A. He's going to be that A-lister real soon. Hey, Pearsall, what you going to say to let this thing go, baby?
Another great Monday, another great man, another great example of what the Watkins Award is all about. We'll talk to you next Monday. Thanks, everyone.
Can't say it better. Thank you again. And this is T-Tate, J. Everett Pearsall, and certainly our special guest, Mr. J.R. Lemon, signing out. I know you could do it. All you gotta do is put your mind to it.